Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is the 23rd of March. It is a Thursday, and it's 14 minutes past 9 o'clock. Now, with all of those logistics out of the way, we welcome everyone, and hopefully you are making the best of a rainy day, a good old-fashioned rainy day and a spring rainy day, so it's a cold rain, but it's refreshing, and late March showers will bring May flowers? I don't know. Maybe that'll be the case. Let me introduce everybody to you, and then we'll get started. A reminder, you can be a part of the program. All you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, good morning. From a taping of the media project, how are you?
I'm good. You know, they didn't. Ira Fussfeld was there, and you know, it's always dangerous when you have to deal with him. But you know, I'm doing pretty good.
Now, I hope you don't take offense to this.
Too late.
I'm just gonna go out and win. But I've known you now for almost 30 years. I've never felt you to be dangerous.
Well, they do insist on frisking me when I come into the building.
How did it go? You have a good time?
It used to be more dangerous if there was only one bagel and we were both reaching for it.
Yeah, that's right. That was
now
back,
there are no more bagels.
That's back when the show was catered.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the listeners to the station who give their hard-earned money to keep us during the fundraising should know that we don't buy bagels anymore.
No, that was some stations are cutting 20% of their workforce.
Right.
Other people are just taking out
the bagels. I'm willing to have light cream cheese. It doesn't have to be the regular full-blown cream cheese. Anyway, it's nice to be back.
It's good to have you here. It always is good to have you
That's
here.
That's right.
Judy Patrick, also a part of that media project cavalcade that just it just finished up. How are you?
It was a high energy show. Just like this will be a high energy.
Yeah, this will be. You're pressing for this.
I am.
You've been goading ever since you walked in the studio.
I think Alan gave me permission to poke him with a stick to get
absolutely
to get him
energized.
That's
what makes it good.
That's right. Well, Judy Patrick is the vice president for editorial development at the New York Press Association. I think you all know this, but if I fail to mention it, Ira is publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. Dorsey Appleers joins us as well, Albany's chief city auditor. Good morning, Dorsey.
Good morning. So happy to be here.
Did you find anybody up to anything they shouldn't be as auditor lately?
No, not lately. Still searching, still looking, but not lately.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Judy, you are asked to report to the front office.
Oh.
Okay.
Judy Patrick to the front office, please.
Judy Patrick to the front office, please. Thank you very much.
Wow.
All right. We'll take care of that. Let me shut this.
The program is off the tracks.
I don't think Judy's car unfortunately got hit in a parking lot.
Oh, man.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
I witnessed that.
Oh, you witnessed that.
I didn't know it was Judy's car, of course. But
yeah.
I did witness that.
So
that's
she has
bad.
To go take care of that. That's unfortunate. Well, she's not going to be so damn happy when she comes back, is she?
This is at the WAMC parking lot?
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah.
What I said before about the fundraising and saving money, the insurance premiums are about to go up.
You make a point.
Have two parking lots.
Yes, you do.
If it happened in the good or the bad parking lot, that's a whole different thing.
Well, I would call the main parking lot is a little tight.
It is the other lot for.
Oh, is
Judy?
It?
Yes,
that's the Linda lot.
That's
yeah.
where she
yes,
parks.
That's
yeah.
where I park
yeah.
as well.
All right,
I wouldn't do that.
Well, we're going to move on and hope everything is okay. And at least she was in here and not hurt. So that's the important part. Well, let's move on and go to what is happening in the world, and we'll get to all of that. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. But Ira, I'm sorry I cut you off. You are right. The show is off the track. So, President, a lot of Trump news to start off with in two particular cases. One is that the Trump lawyer must turn over evidence on classified documents, according to court action yesterday. That's one story. The other is about the grand jury that we've been watching all week. You will remember over the weekend, the president on his Truth social media site announced that he would be arrested on Tuesday. He was not. And that grand jury is now delayed. So I would like to go to the first part of the story, which is about the Trump lawyer who must turn over evidence on classified documents. This is in a federal appeals court weighing in on a battle over whether Trump lawyer Evan Corcoran must provide notes, transcripts, and other documents. A federal appeals court has ruled that Corcoran must provide those notes and transcripts and other evidence to prosecutors about how classified documents remained at the former president's Mar-a-Lago home months after a subpoena to return all sensitive files, that according to court records and people familiar with the matter. The panel of three judges in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit issued a brief order Wednesday afternoon directing the parties, quote, to comply with the district court's March 17th order to produce documents and ending an emergency hold on a ruling last week by a lower court judge. Trump's legal team had appealed that ruling, which said the lawyer, Evan Corcoran, must provide evidence to prosecutors because his legal services may have been used to facilitate a possible crime, obstruction of government attempts to recover highly sensitive documents, according to people familiar with the matter. But lawyers for the president had argued that the material being sought was protected by attorney-client privilege, which in most instances shields any communications between a lawyer and a client. Prosecutors responded, and U.S. District Judge Beryl Howell ultimately agreed that the crime fraud exemption to attorney-client privilege applied in this case, people familiar with the matter said. All right, so what do you think?
I think that I haven't seen the print edition of the New York Times yet today, but last night online they had a story listing all of the cases that are now pending with Trump, and I think there
was a hell of a list.
Yes, it takes your breath away. It's unfortunate that the story that you're talking about now with the client attorney privilege is coming up ahead of coming up behind the what's going on in New York, because this is a meatier case. But I just think that it's only a matter of time. There's going to be one or more indictments on Trump, and it's going to be tough for him to say every prosecutor is racist and every prosecutor is dirty,
political
and political. Yeah. There are just too many balls lining up, I'm willing to be patient. But I am increasingly confident that he's going to be brought to judgment.
Dorsey,
you know, this has stench all over it in terms of the fact that they were withholding or wanting to withhold the documents, transcripts, etc. And I think it was a good call to require that those transcripts and documents be turned over. Not too long ago, we were making the comparison between Biden's mishandling of said documents and thinking about that as it relates to how Trump has handled this situation. And I think, the major difference is this desire to not comply, not to submit the documents, which for many of us implies that there's something that they are trying to cover up and hide. You know, when you have the money, you can lawyer up and build a firewall around you. The question is, will any of this stick? I think other American people want to know, you know, how many times can you escape the hands of the law and justice? And so while we have all of these pending cases against Donald Trump, the question remains, will any of it stick? And I, you know, that's to be determined.
And what do you suspect is going to happen?
If there is anything, you know, the question then becomes, what will be the penalty? Will there be punishment? Will there be accountability? And I can't say that I have a lot of faith, number one, that something will stick. And then number two, if it does, that there will be some significant accountability.
Alan, do you think there is a line that could be eventually crossed where there are so many cases that look bad for Trump, and in fact he may even get convicted of, where the Republican base, which is now strictly in his corner, and other Republicans will finally throw up their hands and say, enough, we've got to forget about this guy?
An answer and a question to you.
Yeah.
The answer is no, I don't think so. And the question is, what do you think?
I'm heartened by some of the responses in general, not specifically to this case, that we're seeing out of the more moderate Republicans in the Senate. Right now, the loudest voices are prevailing in Congress. And as long as Jim Jordan and Comer and Marjorie Taylor Greene are out there, Lauren Boebert, they're going to take up all the oxygen in the room. So they'll be the last ones to fall. But it just seems to me at some point in time, and the presumption I'm making is that Trump will be found, will be indicted on one or more of these issues, and B, will be convicted on one or more of these issues. At some point in time, these politicians who have been reluctant to turn their back on Trump are going to finally say it's either him or me, and I don't want it to be me.
Mm-hmm. But doesn't it seem like everything, let's say, gotten away with so much else, and nobody seems to have cared? The allegations, I would argue, in some cases are far worse than the actual indictments and charges. That doesn't seem to make a difference. People are running on it, and he already has everyone on of his supporters, not everyone, but certainly many, that he is he's being it's a witch hunt and they're out to get him. I don't know. I hope you're right, but I just don't know if that changes.
Well, the other thing that I neglected to mention is that a big part of this depends on what direction Fox News finally decides to go. If Fox News abandons him, and there is evidence that they have at least giving him less or no airtime, then bearing in mind that the base largely gets their news from Fox News and does not know a lot about the downside to Trump because they're not reporting it. If they ever start being more blatant in explaining to their viewers what is actually going on with this guy, that will hasten the departure from the Trump train.
And what will hasten, Ira, the behavior on the part of Fox News? I have my doubts.
Well, Fox News is beyond the fact that they're right in the middle of a major lawsuit that could damage them significantly financially and image-wise. There are more Fox News wannabes out there, and they've got to worry about their ratings. I mean, just yesterday, DirecTV, the satellite TV service, settled its issues with Newsmax, which they had taken off of the air. Newsmax claimed it was for political reasons, and DirecTV, correctly in my view, said this is just a business decision. They were fighting over rights fees. But there are more those news. What's One America News? What's the First News, the one that O'Reilly
Axios
is on?
Axios and then...
Well, but Axios is more of a middle to the left.
No, but I'm just... is it Newsmax?
There's Newsmax. There's One America News. And there's a relatively recent one that Bill O'Reilly appears on called, I think, First News. But at any rate, Fox News, Newsmax is back on TV for those who get their TV on DirecTV, and they have been more to the right than has Fox. So that whole media landscape is very important in terms of the direction of the Republican Party, I think.
Can I just say to that, even if there was a pivot to talk more about what Trump has been accused of and some of his behavior, I do sense that there will be some followers who start to question should they be loyal to such a person. However, I think there's such a significant percentage of his base that are blind loyalists. No matter what is said, they could see it themselves and
absolutely,
they would still support him. And I think if we look at how he rose to power in the political sphere, became president, we saw accusation after accusation, and yet there was still this momentum and groundswell of people who still support it no matter what. So, you know, I just think that the blind loyalists, they are really vested in this notion that Trump is a leader because he stands strong on some of the ideologies that they want to that perpetuate, for example, white supremacy and others. When it comes to some of these Republicans, the point about where have they been, I think the sharks smell blood. Yeah. They have had countless opportunities to speak out, and now they speak out, I think, because they sense that there potentially could be something down the line that really cripples Trump's power and ability.
The Bill O'Reilly Network is the first. It is run by OTT. Weeknights at 8 o'clock. So,
He's showing his age, by the way. I've seen a couple of interviews. He's been on Cuomo's program, and it's tough to listen to him.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue with our group this morning, Alan Chartok, Dorcia Pliers, Ira Fussfeld. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll continue with this subject and move on to others as well. First, we get a news update from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. We are very happy to have you here. We have Alan Chartok, Dorcia Pliers, and Ira Fussfeld. We are hearing the music from Music Haven and a Proctor's Collaborative Passport Series presenting Salsa Night, which is happening at Universal Preservation Hall tomorrow night, Friday, the 24th at 8 p.m. We are hearing Tiempo Libre right now, and we'll hear more of their music as the show continues. You can find out about the performance by going to proctorscollaborative.org. You can find out particular songs and the playlist by going to our website, which is wamc.org/roundtable, and see the playlist posted there. All right, let us go to some letters on this and find out what people think about these indictments. Why would Elise Stefanik or anyone else with any integrity be pushing for the dubious honor, quote unquote, of being Trump's running mate? Perhaps even more of a threat are those Republicans in the House, Senate that continue to refuse to condemn but remain silent on Trump's outrageous, lying, autocratic, dangerous, and disgusting behavior. The silence of quote-unquote mainstream Republicans is deafening, and none of them deserve re-election. A tougher question, how should Congress realistically deal with the continued lies of Fox Infotainment non-news network? Well, those are two very different questions. Maybe we'll stick with the first one. It's in line with what you were saying, Ira.
Yeah, I think Elise Stefanik may see the presidency, the shortest way to get to be president is to be Trump's vice president and hope he wins, and then he gets kicked out.
Yeah. Another letter on that from Brian. Elise Stefanik wants a future. Do you think she'll start to pull away from him as she sees him pulling her down rather than elevating her, i.e. VP in 24? Well, it certainly doesn't seem that way.
I would think not.
She was all over the internet yesterday putting out calls for money to help in Trump's defense fund and to quote unquote eliminate the deep state.
But it sort of attaches to the question I asked earlier. At what point in time, if at all, is Elise Stefanik going to say, "Wait a minute, I've gotten too closely associated with Trump. He's bad news. I better at least move back the other direction." So far, there's no sign of that. But if things go the way they appear to be going for Trump, isn't she going to be going down with the Trump ship if she stays too close to him?
And doesn't, this is to your earlier point about Fox News, and if they distance themselves from Trump anymore, they almost have to have, bless you, they almost have to have an anointed one before they make that call, right?
Well, their indication was that DeSantis was going to be the man.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of an interesting question to have some fun with, is would a liberal voter rather see Trump president or the front runner or see DeSantis, given the fact that DeSantis, although he seems to be clean from a legal standpoint, may be more dangerous to the country in the view of liberals and moderates than is Trump? Does that, did that make any sense, that question?
Yeah, it does to me.
I mean, who, I'm going to ask you to just try me again on it.
Who would liberals rather see running for president, DeSantis or Trump?
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
both are dangerous.
Yeah, both are very, very dangerous. Yeah.
So, would you, knowing what we know about?
But it would seem right now. I mean, this is based on just a hunch, nothing else. But I would think most liberals would want Trump because they know that he can be beaten.
That's what I think. I agree with you, but if on the rare on the possibility that he might win, then what? We be careful what you wish for.
Well, I'm not wishing for that. I'm just
you're just predicting it.
I'm just saying. I would think liberals would prefer that because DeSantis doesn't have as much of the baggage, right? I mean, he has a lot of,
as far as we know,
he has a lot of baggage as far as his policies and, but those are supported by many members of the Republican Party. But yeah. he doesn't have the allegations. He doesn't have the legal issues. He doesn't have the possible indictments. He doesn't.
Trump is suggesting vaguely that there's some scandal in DeSantis' background.
Well, yeah, I don't even know how vaguely he's doing it. Yes.
Can I just say though, as I'm pondering your question, it just makes me really think about how far we've come in terms of the types of people that we will elect and who are seen electable from the Republican Party. We're talking about an era in which we had, for example, George Bush. And now we are at this juncture where our current day political landscape has people wondering, you know, who could be the worst of the two? A Trump president or DeSantis president? That is a very, for me personally, that's a very scary question.
Well, that was my point. It's scary either way, but if you had to make a choice,
But the fact that we're even here,
right?
I think the Trump presidency has really fundamentally changed the political landscape to the point that some of these electeds with ideologies that we would have never entertained as a nation current day, we are now seeing them rise to power with agendas based on how exclusive you can be, how racist you can be. And so it's a very scary and interesting time for American politics.
So let's just change the subject ever so slightly and go to another part of the story, which is the New York indictment and the New York grand jury. As I mentioned, the president said that it was going to happen on Tuesday, which wasn't really based on anything other than hearsay. And now the grand jury hasn't met. It's on delay. And you have to wonder what's going on there. And I will admit up front, I think all we can do is speculate, right? I don't think we have any great insight or that there is any great insight into what's going
on
there.
Well, the insight, or the New York Times reported that Trump was offered the opportunity to speak at the grand jury. He chose not to. And according to Maggie Haberman of the Times, the invitation is usually an indication that the person is going to be indicted and he or she is given this opportunity. So that's a reading the tea leaves.
But why the delay?
Well, that we don't have any idea.
That's what I mean. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about the delay and why, because some action took place earlier this week, and then it's been on hold. And is that in reaction to what has happened over the last two or three days and the response that has been given, or is that they feel that the case needs more? I don't know.
So clearly there's a negotiation going on. The question is, you know, who's on which side in terms of bringing this thing forward?
Who's negotiating?
Well, all the various participants in the...
So in other words, you're saying that they're negotiating whether they should bring an indictment?
Yes, among other things. Yes.
Amongst themselves or with Trump?
Amongst themselves, I would think.
Well, that would be typical. I mean, there's nothing nefarious about that. So I understand that there's 23 grand jurors, and they vote, and then they give it to the DA, and then the DA decides whether he wants to indict. Is that your
That's
understanding?
That's correct,
yeah,
yes.
But who's pushing them?
Who's pushing the
23? In other words, who's pushing the grand jury
to do
what?
I presume they tell them not to watch TV, but they must be influenced. They must know what's going on around
It comes them. Through the walls, believe me.
So I'm just wondering, you know, I think there's questions there. And also I heard this mentioned last night that while Alvin Bragg and others are certainly under great scrutiny, that there may be just a treading water for a few minutes, hours, days to see what happens in Georgia too.
Yeah. Well, I would certainly hope that if, in fact, we use the word delay, the reason that there's a delay is that because the DA, Bragg, wants to make sure he's got this thing nailed down. And he's waited this long. He doesn't want it to come apart at the last minute.
This is his moment.
This is his moment. I remember a year or so ago, we were all, you particularly, Alan, were very critical of Bragg because it looked like he had dropped this case, which he initially did. And for whatever reason, he's come back to it.
Well, the reason is he was getting criticized, I believe.
Well, then that feeds into the complaint that this is a political decision.
The other thing, too, is that for his part, Bragg has said for a long time, but especially over the last week and a half, as with the New York Times reporting and other media reports, that they're still working. There's no date. They don't know. And it could be soon. It could be longer. So for his part, he has been, some would say that he was, trying to put it off a little bit. But by the same token, it seems that's the case.
Isn't there, with all grand juries, a drop-dead date? In other words, they have a term to fill. Don't they know how long the term is before it starts, regardless of what it is they're listening to?
That was my impression.
That is my impression as well, but I don't know in this case of when that date is.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why I want to say 30 days. That doesn't seem enough, but...
All right, let's take a break, and in that time, we'll get about 400 letters answering Iris' question, so we'll be in good shape when we come back. It's 45 minutes past 9 o'clock. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll welcome your letters and also go to other topics. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We will be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Dorsia Pleers, and Ira Fussfeld, we welcome you. Panel@WAMC.org. Letters, we go to Tom. We know that if Trump loses the Republican nomination, he'll claim it was a fraud and probably run as a third party. Do you think that this split would help the Democrats?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Or put another way, it certainly wouldn't help the Republicans.
No, but you know, I maybe you have this statistic. I think I read yesterday that Trump's approval rating among Republicans is actually increased since the last measurement.
It has. I think it went up 3 points. Does that sound right?
I believe he was at 50, and then the whole bunch of others were made up the other 50.
So it is, it's interesting to see. I'm looking it up real quick, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it in, his favorable rating right now is 41%, which is up.
It's not bad.
Which is up, by about 5 points.
We should check back in the days ahead to see what that percentage looks like.
That's right. And when you look at it, it does go all over the place. I mean, it's just from like news cycle to news cycle. Okay, let's go to this letter, which is Ted. Trump makes sure he is the center of the news cycle, and that is all radio shows talk about. Is this what we will hear for the next 2 years? Damn right. Absolutely. I would think it's safe to say that we will be covering the presidential race and we'll be covering who is running for president. And if Donald Trump is part of that group, if Ron DeSantis is part of that group, if Joe Biden is part of that group, no matter who is part of that group, we'll be covering that story.
Well, we talk quite a bit on the Media Project about this, and we to posit the question that that launched the discussion. Trump goes on his Truth Social media on Saturday morning, says he's going to get arrested on Tuesday and to go out and protest. And from that point on, for the rest of the day, the cable news channels, at the very least, were absorbed with this and generating all of this interest and all of this publicity for Trump. And the question is, did the media fall into a trap again by just taking Trump's comments and running with them without investigating them, without realizing he has an ulterior motive?
So you're a journalist and have been a reporter and editor.
And publisher.
And publisher. But as far as putting out the story that one of, if not the top Republican running for president of the United States, one of only two announced candidates, is asking for people to protest, given what happened the last time he asked people to protest, is that not a story that you would want to follow?
Well, initially, I would have said exactly what you're saying, that this is a story, so we've got to cover it. But given his history of ginning up a topic to his benefit, and he sees it's to his benefit to release this, that the question is reporting it versus overkilling it. And then, as the point I made during the program, during the media show, that the New York Times print edition, after a full day of Saturday coverage on the cable news outlets, New York Times ran this story on page 24.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, because they had, they had a full day to absorb it and decide how they wanted to play it. You know, people might say it's they made a political decision. I think they made a journalism decision. So I'm just saying there's a fine line when Trump makes news. Sometimes he doesn't deserve to make as much news as he has made because the media falls into the trap of Trump making an outrageous statement or seemingly a newsy statement and runs with it.
Right.
And I think we're far past overkill when it comes to Trump. Most presidents, they serve their, I don't want to say serve their time as if it's a jail sentence, but they serve the people and then they go off and transition to the next phase of life. In this case, we've been talking about Trump almost something in the news every day, I would say. So, you know, what is too much when it comes to this era and Trump reporting? The news has something printed on Trump literally almost every single day.
I agree with you 100%. I agree with both of you. But it still in this world, even no matter what we've been through in the last 5-6 years with Trump and with just things as they are, that when a former president of the United States says somewhat definitively that he is going to get arrested on Tuesday.
And doesn't.
Well, but we don't know that. But we don't know from Saturday to Tuesday,
right.
that's the story.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I my initial reaction to that comment was exactly the same as yours. This is news. The ex-president is saying he's going to get arrested. How can you ignore it?
Right.
And then the question beyond that initial opinion is, we're not going to ignore it, but how much are we going to play it up, given that we know what his tendency to lie is or to exaggerate, and then further from the advantage of hindsight, we find out that he raised $1.5 million off of that tweet.
Right. I think that that's right. I think what Ira's saying is right there. The media has played a part in, you know, what we see now in terms of this overkill and giving wind to this fire. I do think there has to be some conscious decision to be more responsible in terms of the reporting. To your point about, you know, knowing what we're working with, this is someone who cries wolf. This is someone who baits the media, baits the public, and we all seem to fall into the palm of his hands.
And so what should the media be doing about that, Doris?
Well, I think, as was pointed out, should it be the front page or should it be buried in
23?
Right. You know, should it be reported? Yes, but the question becomes, how big and grand does the reporting need to be?
And I don't know. I don't know what happened, but my guess would be once the grand jury and once the Alvin Bragg's office said, we have no immediate plans, we have no timetable, we haven't notified anybody of anything.
But we did. But we also heard the story a day or two before that comment that the police agencies, including the Secret Service, were all getting ready.
And wasn't there a mention of Tuesday? Specifically,
yeah,
that was Trump. But that was Trump. But my point is that once you have Bragg's office saying this isn't imminent,
right?
That's probably when it went from page one to page 23.
Yeah. And of course, when you're doing it live, as you guys well know on the radio, but cable news, you know, they've got all this time to fill and they've got a Saturday morning when nothing else is going on. So their day was made. All they had to do was bring people in.
That's what I did. All right. Let's see. Who is this from? This is from Ted. Trump makes sure he is the center of the news cycle that is all radio talk shows talk about. And I think I already read that.
That's
letter,
three from
even
Ted,
though it wasn't
I think.
That. Yeah, three for Ted. That was a great show.
Was that the little teddy bear? Seth MacFarlane?
That's right. Mark Wahlberg. Yes. James writes, I feel DeSantis is too extreme for moderates. If Republicans were smart, which they aren't, they would nominate someone like Chris Sununu, who would get the moderate vote, and the Democrats who think Biden is no longer up for the job. Am I wrong in this? But I think Chris Sununu has said he's not interested, right?
I don't know that he said that, and he's showing up on a lot of programs.
All right.
It looks like he's just sort of laying in the weeds.
Waiting to see what happens. Carl says, does anyone know of any documentation as to how many of the hundreds of Trump followers arrested and convicted from the January 6th coup attempt that have had a change of mind towards Trump and his policies? Well, those stories certainly have been out there. I don't know if there's an actual number, but I think there's some, you know, jail cell confessions that have gone on.
And there has been some reporting on people who have changed their minds and other things. So,
didn't Pence indicate he was running for president in 2024? He has not officially announced. That's right. The only two people that I know of that have officially announced are Nikki Haley and Donald Trump.
Yeah, there's another person whose name I'll terribly mispronounce, but one of those.
Marianne Williamson, but that's not on the
This is someone with either an Indian or Pakistani name, but I don't know much about him.
Okay, we go to this from Steve. DeSantis scares me more. He is Trump with discipline. I can see that, right?
Did you see what
Disney is doing? And the Disney in Orlando is going to be hosting a major LGBTQ summit. And it just seems to me to be a slap at the face of DeSantis, who has, of course, given Disney a very hard time.
Well, we'll see what happens. Judy's back. Are you coming back because you want to be a part of the show, or because you don't?
She needs a ride,
or because you don't have a car?
My poor 90-year-old mother-in-law. She's hearing this on the radio. She thinks something's wrong. But what it was it was just a fender bender in the parking lot. My car was parked. Everybody's fine.
All right. Good. Well, we're sorry too.
That was a better story. Thinking it was worse than that.
All's well.
All right. Everything's taken care of.
Now let's repeat the whole program.
Yeah, that's right. We can have those conversations over again. Judy can be a part. Now it's a party. Judy's back. We'll be. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. Panel at WAMC.org if you'd like to be a part of it. First News with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Dorcia Pleers, Ira Fussfeld, and Judy Patrick is back. Everything all right?
All's well.
Okay.
All's well.
All right. Great. Just a little fender bender. Everything's fine. Nobody hurt. All that's good. So, as people always say to me when I have car accidents, which is more often than I would like to admit, that's why you have insurance. All right, let's go to another topic and talk about something else. We'll start fresh now that Judy is back, and that is the let's talk about the idea of what Republicans are now suddenly concerned about their own witch hunts. This is an article from the Washington Post and an analysis piece by Aaron Blake, which I found fascinating. It was a quote that might have escaped notice in the New York Times' long profile of House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer. Another powerful Kentuckian offered a comment that on its face praised Comer. He's likely to do it in a more kind of level-headed, less flamboyant way than some members of the House might do that job, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said. McConnell added, he'll do it as well as anyone could. What we don't know is whether anyone could. The idea that Comer is actually acting in a measured way is debatable, as Philip Bump writes for the Washington Post. The oversight chairman has often offered both broad theories about government and democratic malfeasance with little to back them up. It's nearly all innuendo, a big corkboard with lots of pictures but little interconnecting string, as Bump put it. But McConnell's characteristically careful choice of words is interesting. He seems to advise against Comer and the GOP's probes of the purported weaponization of the government entering territory favored by the more conspiratorial voices in the House of Representatives. And there's more where that comes from. The GOP's effort to cast the government's treatment of Republicans and Donald Trump as a vast conspiracy has at times tempted some Republicans to try to check their colleagues, often very subtly, of course. On Tuesday, the day the Comer profile was published, some Senate Republicans urged caution regarding a letter from Comer and other House GOP chairmen requesting investigative information from Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg as Bragg's decision on whether to seek a Trump indictment neared. I personally prefer to see them work on the agenda they ran on and that got them the majority, said John Cornyn, the Republican from Texas. He told that to Axios. The same outlet also quotes two other Senate Republicans offering similar messages. I think you've got to fall short of getting involved in the legal process, added Senator Jerry Moran of Kansas. You want to know lots of facts before you set down that path. The concerns here are apparent. This would be the federal government potentially infringing on local law enforcement's decision-making process in real time before charges are even brought. It would also involve asking Bragg to offer details of an ongoing investigation, which is generally a no-no. Bragg has labeled it an effort to intimidate him. Alan?
I don't have much to say except that these things get very complicated. And when you draw people into this kind of morass, anything can happen.
Right. Republicans should be concerned. The Washington Post, ABC, did a poll that said 56% of those surveyed said the GOP's effort to probe claims that federal agencies are biased against conservatives is just an attempt to score political points versus 36% who said it it's that it is a legitimate investigation. So I imagine as these hearings go forward, if they clearly show that it's a morass, that those poll numbers will even get worse for Republicans.
Person?
And I think it's about time that they hold themselves accountable. Many of us have been wanting Republicans to hold their colleagues accountable for some of their statements, ideologies. And so I think this is a great step. They're known for being in lockstep no matter what. But in this case, I think it's refreshing to hear that there are differences in opinion about how some of these cases should be handled.
Well, I think part of it, one of the key words that I would use in describing this story is gerrymandering. I mean, this is you've got these congressmen and women who are on 2-year terms and who have been elected largely in heavily conservative, far right districts that have been gerrymandered. So, and they have to put their own careers in jeopardy if they're going to back off being the bomb throwers they have been, because the people who put them in office want them to be bomb throwers. You know, I think the senators have the advantage of 6-year terms and the sense that they're more quote-unquote senatorial body, more contemplative, and are able to see nuances, real or imagined, that we don't see from the congresspeople. So that's a long way of saying I think that we are going to see some moderate, even some conservative senators do as that story described, which is caution the Republicans for not going too fast, too much. But the ones who are doing it, I don't know that they have I don't know that they have an incentive enough to change their course.
You know, from a media perspective, how much should these be covered? I know they'll be on C-SPAN if you want, but how should the news organizations deal with these hearings as they crop up? Because they have to make the decision.
Would you agree? It seems so far they haven't been covered very intensely, I don't think.
I agree. And the only way I find out about them are through stories like this. That's not something that's making the cable news or the broadcast station's regular nightly news. Again, they're probably on C-SPAN, but they're not getting the kind of highlight. Maybe they're on Fox and on Newsmax.
Robin,
though.
I think that you're seeing clips. You know, they're not playing the hearings wall to wall, but you're seeing clips of. I've seen 3 or 4 this week. Most recently, last night, I saw it. I don't even know who the Republican's name is, but he was having a back and forth with AOC. It made good television. They were fighting. They were not literally fighting, but they were arguing with each other, and it certainly held my interest. To whatever extent the Congress people in question feel it's beneficial for them to be bomb throwers, because they're going to get that clip on the news, what's their incentive not to be?
You know, there's a lot of congressional hearings to cover out there, and people have to make a choice about what they cover. And I guess the press would be remiss if we didn't cover some of these.
Right. I mean, even as we're speaking now, there's a hearing going on regarding TikTok. We don't know what exactly is being said by whom, but like all of these hearings, these politicians are going to use a soapbox to make them look good. They're not going to ask questions. They're going to make statements, because they know that is what the people at home want to hear.
And TikTok is a sexier subject, so to
literally
say.
Literally and figuratively.
Than like a congressional budget reform or sewer regulations overhaul.
We got this from Mark. Trump's announcement of imminent arrest may have been strategic in another aspect or respect. The delay in indictment then becomes a source of speculation about what nefarious machinations are going on in the prosecutor's office, fodder for conspiracy theories and theorists. Then we go to Peter. You continue to provide coverage to a mentally ill malignant narcissist who thrives on hearing his name, be it for good or bad. He's like a serial killer who thrives on reading his or her name in the paper. Quit giving this dangerous person what he wants.
Yes, stop reporting the news. Stop reporting what people are saying about themselves and about others.
The leading candidate in the Republican Party for President of the United States.
Did you hear that allegedly one of the things that he's been thinking about is if he is in fact in part of a perp walk, handcuffed or otherwise, should he be smiling? That the consideration he's trying to make, should he be smiling in defiance of what's going on, or should he remain, you know, without any expression as he's led in? I mean, these are the kinds of things he supposedly is thinking about.
Well, what do you think?
What do I think?
I don't think he can pull off a smile.
You know, this is the same man who gave some thought to when he got released from the hospital after being treated for COVID, was thinking about walking to the top of those stairs and having a Superman insignia underneath his shirt, you know, opening up his shirt. It's like he lives in another world.
I mean, seriously, don't you wish that really happened, though? I mean, wouldn't that have been great? I mean, that would have been great.
Instead, we got the Mussolini balcony scene.
Yeah. all right, in this letter from Russ, prior to his presidency, Trump found legal challenges to be an onerous business expense, but now they seem to be highly profitable. Donations for his defense may pay off his mortgage on Mar-a-Lago. All right, let's go to other topics as we move through the news of the day. I want to go to this story, of course, which is the Fed. And I know our panelists are very excited to talk about banking.
Yes, this is Judy's doing this segment because she missed the last segment.
The Fed, still inflation-focused, raised rates amid bank uncertainty. I will say that Rich Honan yesterday gave his prognostication as to what would happen, and he was dead on. He was absolutely correct as to what happened yesterday. Federal Reserve officials raised interest rates by a quarter point on Wednesday as they tried to balance two conflicting problems, the risk that inflation could remain rapid and the threat that turmoil in the banking system could slow the economy drastically. The Fed on Wednesday pushed interest rates to a range of 4.75% to 5%, and officials forecast one more rate increase in 2023, though they hinted even that was uncertain. In doing so, policymakers tried to signal that they remain focused on wrestling down price increases, but were also paying attention to financial threats. In assessing the need for further hikes, we'll be focused on incoming data and the evolving outlook, and in particular on our assessment of the actual and expected effects of credit tightening, said Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, suggested at his post-meeting news conference. Dorsey, you want to start us off?
Sure. I'm going to start with God bless our economists. You know, I am too following this, and it changes moment by moment. One minute we hear we're potentially on the verge of a deep recession. One minute we hear that, you know, maybe the rates will go up, maybe they won't. And so it is, and I'm sure for the American people as well as myself, it can be confusing at times trying to understand where we are and if the strategies being put in place will actually cool the economy. They suspect that this will be a step further in cooling the economy, and hopefully this will prevent folks from purchasing houses, purchasing cars. That is yet to be seen. The other thing that I felt interesting about this whole thing in terms of cooling the economy, will this have an adverse effect in terms of, with inflation continuing, will we see a settling of high prices to the point it becomes systemic? And as a result, we have to adjust to these consistent high prices that potentially may not go down. So for the everyday person looking at the price of eggs, the price of milk, the price of gas, you know, maybe not understanding all of the complexities of what's happening with trying to cool the economy and prevent a recession, I'm sure people are pulling their hair out and really making some tough decisions. So lots to ponder, but you know, it's changing day by day, and I really don't know what tomorrow holds when it comes to the economy.
ominous words.
You know, the stock market seems like it's, I don't know, fickle or...
Fickle's a good word.
One of the things that they were arguing for, that they wanted the Fed to continue to raise the rate like they thought they were going to, because if they didn't, it was going to send jitters through the stock market. They get jittery so easily. And if anything, I think rising interest rates at this point is encouraging people. I mean, new home sales were up last quarter because people are saying, well, I better buy the house and get the mortgage before the rates go up anymore. I better buy the buy the car before while the rates are still in the 3 or 4% range. I mean, a lot of us here lived through the 80s where we paid, 14 or 15% interest on our mortgages. So we're I kind of roll my eyes at a 4% mortgage rate. That seems ideal to me. Mm. But we were coming out of recession too, and so there were a lot of people who were unemployed. I agree with Dorsey. The price of bread, the price of milk. That's what a lot of you go into the grocery store for enough to go through the express checkout, and you're $40 or $50 lighter. I think that is what people are seeing. At least most of the voters, the people in the stock market, they don't care how much the price of bread is.
So do you? I don't know the answer to this question. I don't know whether you do. So we read that the Fed is raising interest rates a quarter of a point. Can we draw a line between that and the price of eggs going down?
I think the price of eggs will go down just because I think the chicken situation is going to be, I think that's a result of a chicken problem.
It's all about the chickens.
It's all about the chickens. But the thing about inflation, things go up. You don't see deflation very often. There was some indication from the financial quarters yesterday that maybe the Fed next year will start to bring the interest rates back down, which would be interesting too. But I think... people who sell milk, eggs, bread, cereal have gotten used to charging $4 or $5, and people are paying for it, mm-hmm. so they're continue to charge it. It's what the market is bearing at this point.
Yeah. Well, I find the whole thing muddled in my own mind. I just sort of step back and see that in the history of this country, we've had times of inflation and we've had times of recession, and it all sort of sorts. It's all cyclical, and it all eventually right. straightens out. I must confess, what got my attention was these bank failures. I mean, most of us who have any amount of money, whether it's $1 or $1,000 in the bank, don't ever think that it's not safe for it to be in there. But once in the days following the initial bank failure, there have been so many reassurances by people saying, "Don't worry about it. Your money is safe." Then I'm, for the time being, accepting that, and I'm just going to let the economic issues run their course.
Are you implying that's a lie?
Which part?
The idea that it's safe.
Yeah. No, I don't. If I was going to be cynical, I wouldn't call this one a lie. I would say wishful thinking.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I was young, I used to think that you deposited money and then they put it in that big vault in the back.
Right.
But that's not what they do. And especially because they haven't been giving us much interest on our savings. I thought that's maybe where the money was, but no, they invest it, and so they can give, so they can earn money and they can give it to their stockholders. And so it's not like your money is back in the vault.
And I think it was NPR yesterday morning, right before the roundtable. They were doing a story on this, and they were talking about the FDIC, the $250,000 guarantee that your money is safe. And they spoke to a basketball star whose last name I won't even attempt to pronounce, but his first name is Giannis. Most basketball people will know it. And he makes billions of dollars. And apparently what he did with his money was he took $250,000 and opened 50 accounts in 50 different banks to protect his money. So there's a way to go as soon as you have that kind of money.
See, that's the problem with having a lot of money. Yeah. You have to do all that.
You got
to
be creative.
It's a lot of paperwork. We get this letter from Linda Elizabeth said of Jerome Powell yesterday, quote, "Powell is a dangerous man to have in this position." Was that Elizabeth?
Why is that?
Who's Elizabeth? Is that a Fred Sanford reference?
This is the big one.
I assume Elizabeth Warren?
Could be.
Well, she's been critical.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I don't know the answer to your question.
I mean, he may be right or he may be wrong, but what was the verb that they used?
Dangerous man to leave in this position. Then we go to this letter, which is blaming the president shows how uninformed the general public is. The Federal Reserve is holding the power on inflation.
Who was blaming the president?
I don't think we were. I think maybe
the
Republicans.
Republicans have been saying this is Biden's fault.
Oh, okay.
All right. We have just a few minutes. We'll take a couple more letters, and then we'll finish up on our other side of the break. The inherent problem with the stock market is that even though the wealth management industry sells their services to the general public as a long-term investment, the dynamic of it is dominated by day traders. They affect the ups and downs hourly. Is our money safe anywhere outside of grandma's mattress?
Or grandma's bra.
Or a jar in the backyard. Lots of places.
Your panelist is wrong when she says that people in the stock market don't care about rising prices. More than 50% of people in the country hold stock. Only some 20% of the country has a defined benefit pension. A lot of ordinary, everyday people are in the stock market. Then we go to this one on mortgage rates. Just a small correction. The current average 30-year mortgage rate is over 7%, not 3 or 4. And we go to oh, this is a correction of my correction. Richard was partially correct in his Fed rate prediction. He also said that an increase in the rate would bolster market confidence. However, the Dow fell 500 points yesterday. Keith says, so Senate Republicans are agreeing. I don't understand. Again, here's a lovely tip. For writing a letter, if you're going to use first names, I don't know who you're talking about.
Ira, that's safe.
Well, Ira is safe, right? But when they just say like Ted and Jack, yeah. I don't know who they're talking about. If that it was a part of the story that we've just read, then I would know who Ted and Jack are. But otherwise, I don't know who Ted.
So
and Jack
read it,
are.
And maybe we can help you out.
No, it doesn't make that much sense. So we'll skip that one. Trump has been in the news for nearly 8 years. I'm solid. I'm wary of him. It's time to go. I can't believe it's taken you 8 years to be wary.
Who is he wary about? Powell.
Trump.
Yeah, and he was in the news even before 8 years ago. I mean, he always loved being in the tabloids. He did a good job of representing himself and getting his name in the papers one way or the other. He's always loved that. The idea that he was a politician, he tried to run for president a few times unsuccessfully, then he got elected magically, and then it's been all Trump for the last... eight years.
Somebody pointed out, I don't know if it was NBC or NPR this morning, that Trump, before he got into politics, always was very loose with what he was doing legally, but never did cross that arrest line. And he's been afraid of getting arrested for as long as he's been in public life and has been able to escape, my word. And now he may finally have met his match.
One more letter and then we'll take a break. Luke writes, these interest rate hikes are killing poor people, lower middle class people at the pocketbook. We need a solution that's not worse than the problem. Windfall profit tax on big oil companies. President Biden should use all of his political capital, and that is if he wants to let the people know that he's on their side. That from Luke. We will take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have much more to discuss on this Thursday morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Dorcia Pleers, and Ira Fussfeld. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We will continue after this short break. Hey.
good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Dorsey Appleers, and Ira Fussfeld. And we have our last segment together, so we'll make the most of it. If you would like to write to us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. All right, let's go. I have had this story on the docket for the last 4 days, and I have not gotten to it. And you're going to say, Joe, but why did you put off talking about a story about fungal infections? And it's a good question. It's a really good question. But the more it's a story that keeps on giving, in the sense that there's new aspects to it every day. So I'm sort of glad we waited, because we know a lot more even over the last 3 days than we did on Monday when I first read the story. A deadly fungal infection is spreading, quote, at an alarming rate inside health facilities and long-term care hospitals across the United States. This according to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Here's what to know about the highly resistant fungus, a strain of a yeast known as, and I'm going to screw this up, but we're going to give it a try, which is Candida auris, CANDIDAAURIS, or C. auris for short. The CDC says it presents a serious global health threat. While healthy people are not likely to contract the infection, those with lower immunity and people living in nursing homes are more likely to fall sick and be able to fight the infection, and the outcome can be fatal. Candida is a family of yeasts that can be found on the skin and inside the body. Usually the fungus lives in areas such as the mouth, the throat, the gut, without causing health problems. Common types of Candida include Candida albicans, which causes the yeast infection thrush. Sometimes, however, certain types of Candida can cause infection in older people and those battling other health issues. First discovered in the ear canal in a patient in Tokyo in 2009, it can enter the body during medical treatment, including operations or when urinary catheters, tubes, or drips are inserted, and can also infect surgical wounds. While the number of cases recorded by the CDC is only in the thousands, it is considered a serious global public health threat because it is drug resistant and has the potential to spread among the most medically vulnerable populations. It is also difficult to identify using standard laboratory methods, and it has caused outbreaks in healthcare environments across the country. So, as far as this country, it has been diagnosed in a handful of patients in the U.S. Starting in 2016, and clinicians in American soil have been warned by health officials to be on the lookout for the infection. Most recently, it's been detected in more than 20 states, with the most cases recorded in Nevada, California, Florida, New York, Illinois, and Texas. That, according to case counts provided to the CDC from local and state health departments. They have tripled nationally just in the last year. So obviously the CDC is looking at this and trying to control this and trying to prevent it. They say there are control measures that can prevent it, including adherence to hand hygiene and thoroughly cleaning hospital environments. And yet it is a pesky fungal infection.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
We already have a theme song, Candida by Tony Orlando and Dawn.
That's right.
Yes, that's right. It's the fungal theme song. Yeah,
I'm listening to reading that story last night and hearing you read it. Alan, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I read that story and I said, this is just what Alan and I need. Both of us hypochondriacs, and both of us now have to hear a new disease that we have to watch out for.
A new fungal infection.
Yeah, who, man. Me? Hypochondriac?
Now, let's be clear, a new deadly fungal infection. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking my toes. I'm thinking of, you know, the things that don't usually, you know,
right.
Funguses are hard to get rid of. I guess is the correct term. They tend to be stubborn. But the idea that the word deadly caught my attention, and it is very scary, especially because it doesn't seem, it says it's treatment resistant. Does that mean it's impossible to treat? You know, it's it just must be very dangerous.
It's not good.
Who knows how many other, and I'm not downplaying it, I'm starting to worry about it, but there's just
I'm not downplaying it, I'm scared to death. Yeah,
what else is there out there that we don't know about? I mean, this story is very interesting. How come we're learning about it now?
Yeah, 2009 they knew about it. Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
We could have been worried about it for a long time. Well, hopefully the hospital's out.
I found some other things to be worried about in the meantime.
That's good. Dorsey?
Well, I was going to say thank you for covering this, from a public health perspective, and I was trained at the school, UAlbany School of Public Health. I have my background in public health. One of the things that we know for sure is that awareness and education is key. We learned that with the pandemic, we waited to, while it was a global issue, the U.S. was slow to talk about it. And in this case, talking about it helps people to be more conscious of how it is transmitted, how to prevent. So I just wanted to say kudos for talking about it today. From a public health perspective, I think people are saying we can't catch a break. Every time you turn around, there's something else that we need to be mindful of. That being said, like other infections, public health issues, there are some ways that this can be mitigated, as was discussed, washing your hands. It's such a simple practice that many of us don't take very seriously. In the hospital settings, of course, it's very challenging to prevent the spread of infection, but it's possible. I can't tell you how many times I cringed when I was at a specific hospital locally when I had my daughter, and the amount of providers that came in and did not wash their hands. And this was in the middle of a pandemic. For most who know me, I had a baby premature and with a very compromised immune system, and yet many providers came in, did not wash their hands, and wanted to start touching my child. And to the point I had to say, put a sign on my door that says, when you enter, wash your hands. So I think this is a clear message to our hospital settings that they need to really be focused on training and enforcing things like thorough cleaning and washing hands. We talked about death rates. It's 30 to 60% of people who contract this die. So this is a very serious infection, and it needs to be treated as such.
Why do you think I'm struck by the story you told about the hospital workers coming in. And I assume it's just some of it is, and for want of a better term, you're doing as much. You may even forget that you're not doing it because you have to do it so many times when you walk in. But I'm just wondering what fundamentally hospitals can do to change that, because they're not always going to have you as a patient putting signs on the door that say, "Hey, idiot, wash your hands." Not that your sign said, "Hey, idiot," but.
Well, I was pretty irate about it.
Okay, maybe it did say, "Hey, idiot."
I was really irate about it. We can't underestimate training and signage. Yes, some of our providers are overworked, exhausted, and they're just going through the motion and caring for very sick people. But with that, because they are caring for very sick people and very vulnerable people, they have to be even more diligent about things like washing hands. So in this case, when I complained to the nurse manager, we collectively came up with some strategies that would help the nurses on the floor coming in. And one was the sign. The other was talking to their staff about, again, the importance of washing hands. But to that point, this is public health 101. This is nursing 101. As soon as you are preparing to care for someone, you wash your hands. So I don't know why that training goes out the window, because it is the basics of healthcare and providing care, especially in hospital and nursing home settings. So the training we can't underestimate, and then the constant reminders, signage, etc., in our hospital settings are very important. And then educating our patients to advocate for themselves. Because I have a public health background, I was a stickler for, nope, you didn't wash your hands, you didn't put hand sanitizer on, so you need to go back out and try this again. But really making sure that patients are aware that they can advocate for themselves and their loved ones to require gloves be worn and hands washed and their rooms be thoroughly cleaned.
And this is a dumb thing to say, I guess, but and you weren't worried about this in particular. You were worried just about infection in general, about bacteria in general,
and
about
COVID.
Germs, and of course COVID. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Which all have the same not treatment, but certainly avoidance, which is you can help if you wash your hands.
Absolutely.
The other thing, and we only have about a minute and a half here, that I wanted. Well, actually, let's go to some letters. We do have some letters.
And by the way, the CNN is saying that the grand jury is meeting but not discussing Trump today.
All right. There we go. So they were not. They did not meet yesterday. They are meeting today, but they're not discussing Trump. Okay, letters that simply have the subject line fungus. Why did you delay for 4 days discussing the news about the fungus? Answer, because you wanted it to grow on you. I'll be here all week. Please tip the waiters, says Will.
Funny.
But I'm
yeah, yeah. Very nice, Will. Thank you for that. Also, It's nice when the audience writes the material for you. Isn't that handy? Yeah, I like that. My understanding, says Teresa, is that there is a climate component to this story in that this specific fungus has been present in the environment for a very long time, but slight temperature increases worldwide have allowed it to become a human pathogen at many locations globally. The climate issue will likely have far-reaching consequences. I did not read that in the couple of stories that I read, but I don't discount what the listener is saying. It's probably true, but it's an interesting component.
Am I correct? Obviously, what Dorsey said is important, particularly in a hospital setting where you want things to be pristine. But the fungus, I guess you could catch it from holding onto a pole in the subway or mm-hmm. moving a shopping
Certainly.
Cart.
Mm-hmm.
So the hospitals for sure ought to be protected. But what is protecting the rest of us?
How old were you when you learned that you were going to catch something from hanging onto a pole in the subway? most hospitals have infection control nurses for this purpose, says Susan. And we have many letters on this, so I'll just pass it along. These are suggestions from listeners who say, I watched American Masters on PBS last night, which was about the incredible Dr. Fauci and his work with the CDC. I came away with renewed confidence, and I highly recommend viewing this documentary. And that is, we've got several letters this morning about that and urging people to watch it. We are out of time for this Thursday morning. My thanks to everyone. Judy, I'm sorry. Sorry you had a bad morning, but I'm glad you got to spend most of it with us. I appreciate you being here. Alan, thank you very much as always.
Thank you, Joe.
Dorsey and Ira, always good to see you. We'll be back right after this.